Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Please be advised that Little Miss Recap contains adult language. Hey guys, welcome to Little Miss Recap. My name's Amy Archer and I'm here today with my sidekick, Steph, and our very favorite only maths person that we love this season, Michael. Hi, Michael. Welcome.
Yay. What a distinguishing honor. I'm flattered. I'm flattered.
You should be. We're a tough crowd. We're a tough crowd, yeah. As you've heard.
Oh no! I was there. I was able to witness the growth and how you started to have an affection for me. So again,
we had a little bit of our own growth happening.
Yeah, because you were. So how did you feel about us calling you broke down prince?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I was gonna set the stage if I ever reference broke down prince or mm-hmm. broke back.
I can't say it.
Or word salad. I want you to know mm-hmm. that I say it with love and affection. I welcome it all.
I mean, look, I have to say something. You guys are so brave to do this shit because the thought of like me putting myself out there and all these podcasters just saying whatever they wanted to about me, it would be so intense. I could not deal with it. So no. The fact that you're taking it in stride, we appreciate. And it's all terms of, listen, you were definitely on the set of your own VH1 video after that wedding.
That was so fucking hilarious. I'm sorry. It just is.
Oh, it was Purple Rain in there.
It totally was.
Okay, Michael, let's get into the stuff. Now, okay. we're gonna really push you here. So if there's something you can't say, you got to tell us you can't say it. We still might try.
Okay.
But we're gonna, you know, okay.
I mean, I could set some, there's one ground rule I know that I can't skirt around. So I could set that to start if you'd like.
Okay, go ahead. Set a boundary with us. Yeah. Go, do it.
So the one thing I know I can't articulate on is I can't say anything that would, like I can't specifically give away the identity of the runaway bride.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we're not interested. She's the least interesting part of this.
We're okay. Like, ooh?
Sure, sure.
Okay. Okay. All right. Other than that, I think we're good.
Okay. So tell us first, I wrote, are you cool with us calling you Broke Down Prince? And you seem to have been okay with it. All right. It is a high compliment. We love Prince.
We do.
Look, so any connection to Prince, I don't care if I'm the Walmart version, Temu version, all of it.
You're a little higher than the Walmart version. You're like the
Target version.
The JCPenney version, I was going to say.
Oh my God, that's even worse.
It's a department store.
So tell us like how you came to do this show. Did they reach out to you? Did you sign up? Like, how'd that happen?
They did reach out to me. Mm-hmm. So I had gotten, and it is kind of curious because my social media prior to the show wasn't any thing big. I had a couple hundred followers. I've always been private. And yeah, I'd gotten a message on there and it was very vague. It was very like, oh, you know, there's going to be a dating show that we're going to be filming in Denver. We're reaching out to see if you'd be interested. And I honestly just ignored it. I was like, this is nonsense. And then the person had followed up. So I had their name and I just searched them on LinkedIn. And that's how I was like, oh, this is like,
to make sure they were like real.
They're real. I was like, oh, this is a credible person, works for a credible production company. I didn't put two and two together, like, oh, Kinetic Content makes the show. And yeah, so I'd responded back thinking it's probably some pilot, you know, something relatively experimental that, you know, they're probably messing around with. They couldn't give me any details over the message. They wanted to set up a phone call. And then through that first phone call is kind of when everything got started.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say you're probably a guy who does well in first meetings. Am I wrong?
You guys will have to tell me at the end of this. This is our first meeting.
And I just know this because, like, I'm somebody who always does really well when I have to meet parents. Because, like, I kind of just know how to work parents. Do you know what I mean? I feel like you just kind of know how to talk to people.
I feel like I'm pretty engaged in terms of, like, understanding social cues. So let's say, for example, if the conversation wasn't going well, I feel like I could pick up on that and pivot. But to be honest, in terms of how that conversation was going, because I was familiar with Married at First Sight, but not with great depth. Like, I knew what the premise was, but I hadn't really taken the time to fully watch a season at that time, like maybe random bits and pieces. So I'm literally doing research while we're talking on the phone. I'm looking at previous cast members.
That could have went either way.
I'm looking at the experts. I'm trying to get quick bios on them. Like, I knew, okay, one was a pastor. I assumed that they have like a psychological or social background. So I'm doing all of that while talking. And quite honestly, I was like, look, guys, I don't know if I'm really what you're looking for. I don't think I'm representative of Denver. From the cast members I looked at, I was like, I think I'm on the older side.
Which helped you. Yeah.
So I, you know, but they were like, just give it a shot. You know, we're going to be wrapping up, you know, this taking in anyone from that wants to be a part of the cast. We're going to be wrapping that up soon. So I did the first step of applying and then it just kept progressing.
This is so interesting to me because
me too.
That means they're not necessarily grabbing people who want to be married. Like, they're just kind of like,
So this is, so I was doing, once I started the process and once I kept progressing, I started to look that up. You know, I was like, well, because that was my concern. I knew what my stance was on marriage, which is I do want to get married. But in fairness, I had accepted the possibility that maybe maybe marriage isn't something that's in my future. But that doesn't mean that I'm not going to take advantage of opportunities that could lead to marriage. Right.
Right.
But I had looked it up because there was a concern I had of like, well, I don't want to be like a novelty or anything on the show, you know?
Right.
And that's when I found out that, you know, there is like an outbound campaign as well as taking in, you know, proactive applications.
What is an outbound campaign? What are you talking about?
So apparently in terms of, you know, the show has, outside of like having people apply, I don't know for how long they've been doing this, but they do like a outbound campaign where they canvass the city that they're in. Apparently, you know, they try to approach people that they think will be
good
candidates.
They're like recruiting.
Steph, you and I could do that.
I know, I totally could.
And I guess they try, because I found out that a couple of my friends had been approached, but through different mediums like LinkedIn, for example.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Because I was trying to figure out, well, how did you guys even find me? And I assumed it was like, oh, a couple of my friends, maybe through that whole connection. But I started to theorize that, and again, it's just a theory. My guess is that, especially among men, it's probably harder to find like a, and when I say diverse, I don't just mean like cultural background. I mean, from, you know, in all the senses, right? I think that might be challenging to get a diverse set of applicants who are men. I think it probably is a little bit more homogenous in terms of their expectations, their lifestyle, their viewpoints on the world. So I think that that would be my guess as to why there's an outbound portion as well as just taking in applicants.
I mean, I think you just summed up why all women have trouble dating right now, because there is this group of homogenous men who feel the same way about everything. No, seriously, though, that's why you were such a welcome respite. We were like,
for sure.
It's not running Brennan through a copy machine. Right?
Oh, man.
All right. Steph, your turn. Go.
I'm going to ask a question from the group.
Okay. From our group is Backdoor Friends, and we ask them, you know, what they would want to ask you. So here we go.
What is your hair care regimen?
Big question. Big topic of discussion in the group.
Bum, bum, bum.
You see, it's kind of wild right now.
Yeah, we like it.
I like it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I could tell you it was probably a lot more interesting at that time when I had the curly hair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so okay, let's go with the curly hair regimen.
So the curly hair regimen was I tried to wash it twice a week was kind of the cadence. Unless like I was doing extra workouts or something and it just felt extra dirty, then more times. And use like dry shampoo in between. Always air dry, no like blow drying it. And then I had like a bunch of different oils I would put in it, like this Olaplex oil and then argan oil. And then various, like these two creams that were supposed to help with the curls. That's why, and I noticed one of the unique things when you have to watch yourself, Amy and Stephanie, is like, I didn't realize how much I like scrunched it.
Scrunched your hair?
And so it became like a nervous tic on when I would see it on, because I remember thinking like, oh, I was actually kind of nervous during that. Or I'm actively thinking out loud and
Boom,
gotta double check that.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, that's primarily it. I try not to apply those oils more than twice a week so it wouldn't get too greasy. But other than that, I try to minimize messing with it. Like I tried, my thought was like, I want it to be as like naturally healthy as it can be.
Less is more.
So the follow-up to that also from the group is, why did you cut it? Was it crisis hair? Because we have a saying like crisis hair is when you do something dramatic to your hair in the middle of a reality show. Did you have, now you waited, but did you have crisis hair?
I mean, I had, it was a different kind of crisis. So after we wrapped up filming, I had left to Colombia and I was there for a couple of weeks. And while I was there, I put my hair in box braids, which I had intended at the time. I was like, I'm going to roll up to this after party filming with box braids, at least the first one.
Okay. The reunion, you mean, right? The reunion. Or the after party.
It was an after party.
It was, because you showed up on the after party with no hair for the first time. I remember it now. Okay.
I didn't mean to mess with the continuity. It just ended up that way. So that was my initial plan. But then it was hard to manage them. It was hot outside. When I removed the braids, my hair was insane.
Okay.
And then that's
Do you have a picture of that?
I do have a picture.
I would like to see that.
Yeah, I think you need to send that to us.
I'll send it to you guys.
The group is going to demand it. I'm telling you right now.
That's why if you notice in the first after party where I'm wearing, not only was it cut short, I'm wearing that hat because it's pink because I had bleached it and dyed it pink.
Oh, man.
Okay.
I love it.
Okay. All right. Next question. We'll stick with the group because they have some good ones.
Sure.
Good ones. How often do you guys meet with the experts?
So every meeting that we have with the experts, well, I shouldn't say that. Every meeting except for one that we had with the experts that Chloe and I had. Actually, no, I can't say that. They were all filmed. It's just in our case, you guys didn't see when we met Dr. Pepper. So we had a meeting with her and we met with Dr. Pia the most. We had three total. I think you guys saw two of them, but we actually had a follow-up phone call with her. Because as you guys probably noticed, especially the second meeting when the authenticity question came up, there was some frustration there. And we ended up having a phone call with her to kind of clear the air around that. So, you know, for us, it was just that we only had that one meeting with Pastor Cal. I was actually surprised because, you know, with everyone else's journey, I kind of learned with all you guys watching it once it unfolded. So I was surprised there was somewhere I was like, oh, I feel like Becca and Austin, for example, I was like, man, I feel like they're they're meeting with the experts every week.
Well, I think that's how it used to be.
I feel like they met with the experts all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in previous seasons, the experts were much more involved. Mm-hmm. And so we were wondering if maybe they're involved now behind the scenes and we just don't see it.
I think the sense that I got, you know, from the conversations I had with the guys and then kind of seeing it unfold is I think it's a little bit case by case basis. So, for example, I think Austin and Becca probably had a lot more visits because they had a specific issue that was recurring. Right. You know, whereas with Chloe and I, we didn't really have any of those big rocks that were recurring or that we were consistently trying to chip away at. So I think that informed how often they saw us.
They had to meet to talk about Austin's slower intimacy speed. That's such a Franken edit. It was so weird. It's like you don't see his face and then you hear this totally different tenor to his voice. Mm-hmm. Slower intimacy speed. It's like, okay. All right.
Oy
vey. Yeah, they're doing the best they can. We all are. Okay. Steph, go ahead.
Okay. So does production pick the storylines that they focus on?
That's a good one.
I never got the sense of that. Let me try to paint the picture for you guys. What happens is there are people that are a part of the show that you see a lot, right? That's the crew in terms of the people behind the camera, sound people, who are awesome people, by the way. And then like your main producers that kind of facilitate everything, right? They give you your schedule, let you know what days you're filming and all that. But they become kind of part of the experience for you because they see you every day and they're there watching these conversations unfold. And I understand the spirit of that question because we talk with them, right?
Right.
Before a scene starts or when a scene concludes, they check in with us like, how do you feel? Did this bother you? Or sometimes they'll straight
really?
Up be, yeah, they'll straight up be like, oh, you know, you seemed off today. Or you seemed upset today. Like, is there something bothering you? So I think a lot of the times they're trying to understand what's happening in your relationship. And based on that understanding, that kind of informs what might be focused on. But also they'll pivot, right? They might think, you know, oh, this there were things like with Chloe and I that they thought might have been, you know, worth diving into.
Right,
and then,
that's why I asked this question. Like, we thought the skirt and the pearls were going to be this huge deal for her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, like, it just went away. Thankfully, I'm glad it went away, but it just went away.
Yeah.
And then it was something else.
I mean, I could talk more about that if you'd like.
Yeah. Did she have a problem with that, or was that kind of just amped up a little bit?
I mean, I felt it was amped up a little bit. It's funny because as it was happening, I mean, that was right at the beginning of our relationship, right? Mm-hmm. And so I started to get the sense, like, I wasn't sure, like, oh, maybe she does really have a problem with it, because it's like the questions that I would field, like when we do the little one-on-ones with the camera and stuff, you know, we're answering questions. It's just, you're not hearing the question, right? So I would be answering a lot of questions about how I dress and like, and then this whole, you know, masculine and feminine traits. And so for me, I was like, This is unique from what I've learned about Chloe over the past, maybe it's like 2 or 3 days at that time. It's like, I just don't feel like, number one, I don't feel like she would have an issue with it. And number two, I don't feel like she would make this connection that how I dress represents the actual personality qualities that I have. Like, I feel like she would separate those.
Sure.
But it was in the beginning of our relationship, so I didn't want to. Like, I thought, well, maybe she hasn't brought it up to me directly and she brought it up maybe in her one-on-one interviews. And so that's informing why they're asking me. But once I developed comfort with her, like maybe once at the back end of like the first week together, I just asked her off camera and I was like, does this bother you? Like, are you like, if this really bothers you, or if you feel like it just puts you in a very uncomfortable position, or you're just really, really turned off about it. Like, we can have that conversation. I obviously don't want to do that to you. And she was very clear on like, no, I mean, she was like, it's weird for me. I've never seen it, but it's not having a material impact on our relationship.
I liked it personally. I was a writer in school. Mm-hmm. And so I always gravitated towards people who kind of were out of the box. You know what I mean? So I was like, dude shows up in a skirt and pearls, I'm going to be into that. That is not a deterrent. Now, if you have a job and like morals, I'm going to be turned off by that kind of stuff.
Sure.
But yeah, out of the box, skirt, pearl, I'm into it. I'm into it.
I can't. I hate you so much.
I know it took you a while, Steph.
It did, but I'm like, I'm sold. Like, she's there now. I'm there. I'm there.
And in fairness to Chloe, like, once we had established that, I was kind of trolling her a little bit. Like with the earrings with Pastor Cal, right? To me, it's like a game of chicken. Cause I was like, okay, are you gonna let me wear them? And is she really going to say, no, you can't? Or is she going to say yes and risk me actually putting them on knowing he's going to come at any moment? Mm. So
can I just say, you know, love Pastor Cal, whatever, but he was the perfect person to have that conversation with.
I figured it'd be the most entertaining to have it with him.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I just have one question about filming. So how often are people with you guys? Like, walk us through a week, like Sunday through Saturday. Like, are you filming every day? Are there people there night and day? Or do you have the cameras? Like, what's that like?
So I will say this. They were very accommodating to our respective work schedules. I mean, luckily I work remote. Chloe was hybrid at the time. So what we would do is we told them, these are our normal working hours. So during the week, they would immediately try to work around that. So most weekday filmings were in the evening. If that couldn't happen, if they needed us on the weekday in the middle of the day, our ask was like, give us a week in advance so we could make those arrangements. So normally we got 2 days off. That was usually like a Tuesday, Thursday, or if we were lucky, like Tuesday, Wednesday, if it's back to back. On our day off, one of those days off, we would probably have to go to what's called the production office. And that's where we would do like our sit down interviews. Mm-hmm. Those usually were a couple hours, right? So that's what our days off look like. And then the other day off is ours entirely. On the weekday, the evening filmings were usually for us, they would come in at around 5:30 to set up. We'd probably start filming at 6:00. And then be done by 10:30, 11 o'clock.
Okay. Now we have the answer why there's no middle-aged people on MAFS. my murder show is on and I'm in bed by 9:30, 10 o'clock.
Like, I mean, it is a struggle for Chloe. Like, I could see when she was fading. Yes. It's like she likes to go to bed early.
Yeah.
Like I would know it's 9 o'clock without even looking at the clock. I would just look at her.
That's so wild. I don't like to go to bed early. I just don't like to fucking do anything at night.
I don't want people in my house till 10:30. Get out.
I was up to like 2 a.m. just like putzing around my house. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to be like entertaining people.
Mm-mm. Sure.
No. Mm-mm. Hell no.
So, and then the weekends were most intense. Because
I do have a question.
Sure.
Talk to me about prison cam.
Yeah, we call it prison cam.
Where the fuck was prison cam?
Like, can you unplug those? Is that an option? Because we're hearing that people have unplugged them and plugged them back in.
So I had to discover if it was or not. They tell you up front, there are going to be cameras in the common areas, right? In our case, there were two in the living room that kind of just had two different perspectives, like one behind where the television is, and then one that's kind of, I guess, in like a walking path between the kitchen and the living room. Mm-hmm. The reason I had to find this out is when we moved into our apartment, you know, and we saw them, one of the things that Chloe had said to me, she's like, look, like, if we have to leave them, we'll leave them. But I do feel weird with these cameras around. Like, I just feel like, I don't know, it feels weird to me. I feel like it's going to interfere with our ability to develop a relationship. You know,
that's interesting.
I understood what she was. I mean,
I get that.
There were lifestyle implications in full transparency. We kind of walk around naked a lot.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
So,
yeah, we picked up on that.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. A skirt or nothing.
Yeah, that's those are the only options in my household. That's why you can't see waist below right now. So we asked our producers about it. And in fairness, they did say this. They said, look, You can turn them off if you want to. We ask that, like, it's, we get it, because this is right at the beginning for us, right? They're like, mm-hmm. look, please, though, if you, you know, as you guys progress, if you develop some comfort, please keep them on. I mean, we want to make sure, like, if you guys have a important conversation or something like that off camera, that we can capture it, you know? Mm-hmm. And they even alluded, they're like, look, and just to let you guys know, like, some of the other couples are really regretting that they had popped theirs off. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we did have some latitude there. There wasn't a specific requirement that, oh, you know, you have to keep them on.
Yeah. Your relationship, let's move into the relationships now. Mm-hmm. So your relationship seemed pretty drama free. Did we read that correctly?
You did.
Like, you guys seem to have a lot of mutual respect for each other. Now, we chalked that up. Steph and I chalked that up to, number one, like, your personalities. But
sure.
Also just being a little older, having a little more life experience. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you agree with that statement?
100%. I mean, one of the things that when I did have an opportunity to start developing, like, a friendship with the other guys, like, we talked about that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because I was going back to, like, when I was in my mid to late 20s and how excitable I was, or, like, it was easy to provoke me, right? Or I could misunderstand something. So kind of giving you that behind the scenes look of, like, what that interaction with the producers are like when they're asking, like, oh, is something bothering you? Or, oh, we noticed this. Like, one time they had inquired, it was during our honeymoon. Unfortunately, the scene didn't make it, but we did, like, a Jeep trail in the Garden of the Gods. Mm-hmm. And we had someone kind of talking about everything while we were going through that trail. And, you know, so I'm listening. I'm in the back of the Jeep with Chloe. And the producer asked me, oh, we noticed, like, is everything good with you guys? Nothing, no arguments last night? I was like, no, why? And they're like, well, we just noticed, like, you weren't being as lovey-dovey, like, you weren't, like, kissing up on her in the back of the Jeep. And I was like, well, that's because we had, like, a guide explaining to us, right. You know, he was explaining things
I'm
to us.
I'm here for the tour.
I didn't want to just be like, oh, hold on, guy, I need to kiss my wife real quick. But I could imagine, like, if I was younger, then I don't know, I could see that being like, was I bothered by something? Or why wasn't she, you know, kissing me? Like, it were moments like that where I was thankful that I was older and that my default thought process was like, no, they're just asking the question. There's not a malicious intent behind
it. I could see some of the cast members popping off getting that question. Some other ones.
I wonder which ones.
Bro. Okay. So let's talk about the plan. Okay. This is, we 85 people asked for us to ask you this question.
Yeah.
Now, we understand most of this information came to you secondhand as well. You were not in on this plan. When did you become aware of a plan? Did you learn it when we did at the reunion? And what is your understanding of the plan?
I became aware of, we'll call it the plan, when I would talk with the guys and they would kind of fill me in on what life was like before Chloe and I got there. Mm-hmm. And what their experience was up to that point and what the whole general tone was. I think what makes this so challenging, especially all of us being in the same boat that we weren't there, is that there was a time where they were like, me and Chloe used to joke and call them the union, which was all of them. You know, all like,
that's pretty fucking great.
Mm-hmm. We used to, because we know that there were things that had, from what they shared with us, there were things that had transpired that they kind of had one voice about, right? Okay. Like with the, my understanding was like with the whole camera thing, this was one voice, you know, about the possibility of unplugging it when they had broached the topic, right?
Okay.
So my understanding was that there was a time where they were more on the same page than not. Okay. And I never understood it as a very, like, detailed plan, like, oh, this is the steps of what we have to do. But more so these, like, agreements of, like, look, however this ends, we want to find the path of, like, least resistance that will, you know, will be the least combative for all of us. Like, that to me was the spirit of the plan.
Yeah, so like a mutual understanding.
I felt like that was kind of like the umbrella. Okay, We want to be able to exit this, regardless of how it ends, in a good way. Mm-hmm. And I feel like from there were individual ones. And that was more couple specific. So I feel like, again, and this is just from what was shared with, and I'll be as transparent as possible. Like, mm-hmm. my perspective is informed primarily from the guys. I didn't really have an opportunity to build much of a relationship with the other women.
Sure.
But I mean, I would cross-reference it to when, you know, what Chloe had heard, and that's how we mm-hmm. kind of formulated our hypothesis, right? But I think, like, for example, with Austin and Becca, there were, you know, they had an idea of how they wanted to do things. Okay, these bigger issues, let's try to find a path forward off camera. And then once we at least, not that we have to have it fully baked, but once we start getting our footing on them, then we address it on camera. That was like the sense I got from them.
Okay.
Cameron and Claire, that was... that was another thing. I used to joke about that all the time too to Chloe. Because by the time we got in, like, Cameron had his heart condition. I really only saw...
Wait a minute. Wait. He had his what? Stuff?
Broken ticker. Yeah.
Yes. He had his broken ticker.
Thank you, because I was going to demand the impression.
Oh, you never need to be demanded. I mean...
Perfect. So we would only hear, like, from Claire. And I used to joke that it's like... I felt like she was like a politician, because it would just be this whole, you know, Cameron couldn't be here, but we are the best of friends, and we will always be the best of friends.
That is so freaking funny, because
that's what
I never
thought
of it that way, but you're so right.
Because I'd look at Chloe and be like, the hell office is she running for?
Let me just tell you, to us, what it seemed like with that situation. And, you know, again, we're not here to like shit talk anybody. Yeah. But what we experienced as viewers was, does she just want to stay on the show? So, like, she's just trying to pretend there's a relationship when there's clearly not. Like, I felt like he had checked out. Like, he was gone.
It was real confusing being a viewer.
Yeah.
I could understand that perspective. I will be honest. Like, I didn't get that sense from her, like, filming with her in the group settings. Like, I never got the sense that she was just trying to, like, force herself there or anything like that.
Yeah, no, that opinion changed when we learned there was a big plan behind everything. Right. But that's how we were experiencing it without that context.
Sure.
Right. We were like, okay, this is real weird, because she's telling us how much she loves him and is like, but he's not there. So we didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
So
that was like my running joke with Chloe. And then Brennan and Emily.
Oof.
I mean, that's a lot there. My opinion was that I never got the sense that he was into her. And at least by the time I was there, right?
Yep.
We thought that too.
And I just felt like he never wanted to. Because when we would be in a group setting and we had to kind of give updates on how things are going with each one of us, like, I felt his was like, I just want to, we're like, we're good friends. Kind of the same thing, but without the, I mean, at least Cameron and Claire they were separated. You know, they had, that had been, you know, it was like it was like Emily and Brennan, I felt like we're in this weird space, and Brennan just like, I don't want to say anything that could like start a fight, or that could start like a negative banter. So I'm just going to say like, oh, you know, I think we're trending in a positive direction and building a strong friendship.
Positive vibes. Good vibes. Good
vibes. Yeah. It's so weird, the evolution of Brennan, because like, I just hated him at first. I was like, he's a bro. I want nothing to do with him. I felt like he was kind of shitty to her at moments on camera. But then during the reunion, I'm like, I think I'm Team Brennan. I don't know what's going on here. Like, I'm sorry, Steph. I don't mean to cut you off. Okay. He absolutely conducted himself. He won the reunion.
Yeah.
Let me put it that way.
Uh-huh.
Steph?
No, I was just going to say that's exactly. We were texting each other like, oh, my God.
Brennan.
What the fuck just happened?
Brennan is a unique experience in that way. Would you like a quick story?
Yes.
We would love one.
So Brennan and I had a very unique trajectory. Mm. Like in the very beginning, when the grooms all first met, which unfortunately you guys weren't able to see.
Right.
Mm. The only one I thought I would be friends with at that time was Cameron, because him and I were joking. Austin seemed super reserved. Brennan was on his whole divorce is not an option. And I was thinking, that's crazy talk. Me and Orion didn't click right away because I was like joking with him, and I felt like he might have taken it the wrong way. This is
of course he did. Of course he did.
But
that tracks.
But so that, you know, my whole first interactions was like that. And then at my wedding, like you guys saw when we were out at the fireplace, and he's like, "Man, I missed you." I was like, "Oh, all right." And in fairness, we also had a moment at the bachelor party. There was a moment between him and I where, like, we were talking off to the side.
Brennan, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was like, look, I know you and I see the world from two very different lenses, but I think we could learn a lot from each other because of that. And he agreed. He's like, yeah, I definitely could see that. So we were in a pretty good place. Then when I got back into the swing of things, we actually got into an argument.
That's a story I want to hear.
Okay.
Yeah, we got it. We got into an argument, and it ended up being something so immaterial, but it ended up being just like it never made it to the light of day. But it was like a conversation he had with Chloe, and then that conversation was supposed to be in confidence, and then things started to leak about that conversation. So like I got upset about that. And me and him, like, we got into it.
Like physical?
I need to see that.
I need more details.
No, we didn't physically fire.
Steph, are you getting a little flush over there?
I am. No,
wait. Michael was gonna beat up Brennan. I'm just kidding.
But we had elevated voices.
Maybe that was in my spank bank. I'm not.
Hey everyone, stay tuned. Little Miss Recap will be right back after these words.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Let me ask you about Brennan and Emily, because this is specifics here. Okay, let's get into this. We felt the turning point for me. So Brennan had kept saying, like, you have this negative attitude. You have this negative attitude. We were not seeing that. But
not
then
at
I think
all.
We saw, I think what he would, I think he was misspeaking. And I think what he wanted to say is I'm seeing mean girl behavior. I think that's what he was kind of implying. Mm-hmm. And we saw that after you and Chloe had this beautiful wedding ceremony. Yeah. And Emily's like, well, what did she say, Steph?
The vows were vanilla or whatever, right? Yes. Or something ridiculous.
And you
like
saw
that.
Brennan's face go, womp. And I was like, I think that's what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would, to answer that question, I would lead in by saying, kind of how mine and Brennan's relationship ended up today is what I learned about him after our little argument was he just has a very specific code of ethics, right? Mm. Or let's just call it a code. I won't even say a code of ethics.
Sure.
It's about like when he keeps talking about being positive, you know, for him, it's there are moments where, and I think that that's the example of it, right? For him, it was hard for him to understand why in this moment would you even bring something up like that, let to a quorum of people where, fine, I mean, he knows us, but she doesn't. So he's way more empathetic than he comes off as, because like what he talked to me about the vows. And at the time, I'll be honest, I was kind of dismissive. I was like, well, you know, if she said that,
like, who cares, right?
Who cares? Yeah. And he was kind of surprised, like, okay, well, I wanted you to know. But I think he was also thinking like for Chloe, because yeah, I mean, most likely my interactions with the group is going to be primarily with the guys in big group setting. He's thinking, well, like Chloe's going to be interacting with these women. And
yeah,
you know, what does that mean for her? So, you know, I think he has a code like that, that he will, at least my experience with him, he will abide by it. And his ask is that you do the same. And I think that's why we saw whatever they had agreed to like not talk about off camera or on camera. I think when he felt that that was violated, you know, that's why he has such a strong reaction, because he's still holding up his end of that bargain. Like, he's like, you violated that, but I'm still not going to talk about whatever it is we agreed on. But then that's
so he's big on that. Like, I give you my word, I expect you to hold on. Okay.
Oh, 100%. Mm-hmm. Like, he's one of those guys that, like, if he promises, again, I haven't had like a ton of promises with him, but you know, for the things that he says, like, okay, I'm going to do this, that's probably the biggest example. He will always follow through. And if he can't, he will like let you know in far in advance.
Mm. And that's an admirable quality, right? Like a follow
through. Yeah, I think so.
Sure.
And I think to more directly answer your question, I think what he was alluding to, a lot of what you guys called out, and they in my humble opinion, they both have unique communication styles that may not mesh well together. And so I think there was this concern of like, I don't know how I can constructively have this conversation with her, period, let alone with the added dimension of being on camera. Because at least if it's on camera and it goes left, like, we're kind of figuring this out in our own comfort. When it's on camera, like, you know, that's a whole different element to it.
I can see that. I could see them absolutely not being able to have a conversation. If only there was like a team of experts around to help with that.
And I think that's why you saw Brennan apologize to Dr. P at the end, because I think the revelation he came to is at the time when he had those conversations with Dr. Pia, he just felt like they were kind of ganging up on him. At least that's the sense I got watching it. I think when he had time to reflect on it, he started to realize, I think her intent was to create that open line of communication for us. And I was stymieing that. And I think that's why he took accountability for that.
Mm. Yeah. Pia was doing some heavy lifting this season. She really was. Just a real quick rundown before we get to you and Chloe, which is the main event that I want to talk about. Cam and Claire, what went wrong there?
Yeah. Well, besides a broken Tikka.
Right. The Tikka was the problem.
I mean, he even had the receipts to show for it. He did.
I think.
In your opinion, of course. This is all in your opinion.
Of course.
In my opinion, I think they had made the determination relatively early that they weren't going to be able to reconcile whatever differences they had. And I think, the unique thing about Cameron, which may not come across, is that he is a hopeless romantic, which I know is weird to say.
Oh, I see that.
Don't fucking lie. You've been calling him a serial killer the whole time.
A serial killer. But serial killers can believe in love.
Two things can be true. Okay.
So I had always gotten the sense that whatever reasoning they came up with, and again, because it was him that I was talking to, I felt like that really bothered him. I felt like he was really bothered by the fact that he concluded early that this wasn't going to pan out how he had hoped. And I do think that they probably were the most, when I say orchestrated, like, I think they had the most kind of like, this is what we're going to do for the rest of the our time on here. I think they probably had the most of that element out of all the other couples. And then when that started to go left, then everything just exploded. And I think a lot of it exploded because of that. Again, in my opinion, I think maybe his feelings were a bit hurt.
That's what I think too. I think he would have stuck it out if she would have. That's the feeling I have.
And I think his feelings were hurt even more when things start to go left, because I got the sense that he felt like, I'm trying to go above and beyond to make this, to have this progress or end as best as it can. Mm-hmm. And then now it's going left and I'm having to take the blame and I'm having to try to figure things out. Like, that was the sense that I got from him, you know, when we did talk.
And Lauren and Orion, I mean, we pretty much saw what happened, correct? I mean, there was nothing else, I don't think, to that. I think he just melted down. I think he slut-shamed her. I think he treated her really horribly.
Yeah.
And I think she conducted herself with class and dignity and intelligence. Sure. And we were all really mad at him.
I mean, that was one of the ones where Chloe and I compared the most notes, because I had heard Orion's side and then Chloe had heard Lauren's side. And then we compared notes and we're like, well, there's one thing we can say for sure. The events in both the stories line up exactly. Like, they both said, like, yeah, there was a joke that was made that had racial undertones. And I was like, oh shit. You know? And then there was a conversation. And he even, when he told me about it, he even admitted, he's like, man, I handled it wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I slut shamed her. And I'm thinking, like, I want to see what this conversation
he's right. Was. I need to go to the producers and get that footage.
Because we went there to see it. By the time Chloe and I got into it, that was already weeks ago. We didn't want to be like, so can you kind of just give us the details of this?
Yeah, and I liked
the scene though, man.
I liked him at first because I always picked the wrong ones. So I liked him at first, and then I'm sure he's a fine human being, and I appreciate that he wanted to, illuminate his culture, and
sure.
I thought that was all great, and I was totally on his side. And then he slut shames and basically calls a black woman racist on TV, and I'm just like, okay.
That was rough.
I will say this about Orion, and I know you had a thing for him in the beginning.
No, I'm so ashamed of myself.
I don't think you would feel ashamed if you, in real life, when you're around him, he has a very gentle and welcoming tone to him. Even when I was mentioning that, when I first met him, I joked with him and I felt like he took it the wrong way. I still felt like he was welcoming towards me.
I can see that.
I would totally get, do you think me knowing what, that doesn't stop it? I would still totally be attracted to him.
But I do think that even he would agree, because he's the youngest out of all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think during filming, he was 27.
Yeah, no, we knew that stuff. We talked about that.
I forget fucking everything.
Because I said, he seems so mature and he's only 27.
So I think a lot, especially because his situation was so explosive, I think that really opened his eyes of wow, there's, when it comes to conflict resolution, there are a lot of things that I still want to develop more and be better at. So I think it kind of shined that vulnerability for him.
So that brings us to our last hope for a long time was Becca and Austin.
Uh-huh.
We were Stephanie just adored Becca. We both did. We still do. And I always liked Austin. I felt like Austin, I grew up with a lot of Austins, you know, just guys who lay around their apartment, smoke weed and play video games. I get it. Mm-hmm. I get it. What was wrong there? What do you think that he just, because in the end, we just kind of came up with, he can't match her emotional intelligence. And she kind of got sucked into the union, if you will.
See, I feel like he just wasn't attracted to her.
Mm.
And I hate saying that because I think it's just a vibe that I picked up on. Yeah. I'm probably wrong.
Well, Stephanie, we had hammered him behind the scenes. Like, are you attracted to her? Is this a problem? Is it an issue? And he had always been adamant and steadfast that there was an attraction there.
Mm.
And I'll also say I'm the most biased towards Austin. I need to come clean there. Austin is my guy.
I like him. He's
a really, really nice guy. It really, the hardest moments for me outside of my own, you know, relationship were like watching him go through certain things.
Like the pizza party attack.
Oh, that was
brutal.
Freaking brutal.
And the reunion. There were parts of the reunion that was hard.
Yeah. So like during the reunion, were you like scared for your life at some point?
Yeah. Did you feel like you needed a helmet?
I was more scared going into it than when it was happening. Because Chloe and I hadn't talked in months, like leading up to the reunion.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But to answer your question about what happened with them, I think they have two very different needs. The biggest, I'll use one example and you could tell me if this helps crystallize it. One of her biggest complaints that I remember was we have these conversations on camera that have a level of depth, but once the cameras are gone, you know, we don't have these deep conversations. I want us to be able to have deep conversations off. I was like, oh, I think because the what I cross-referenced that was like with Chloe and I, like we would have these deep conversations on camera and we would literally off camera, we'd be like, look, let's just use this time to relax.
We're tired. Yes. Yeah.
And like, I don't want to have these conversations off camera and then we have to rehash it on camera. Let's use this time to relax. So I think for Becca, she really craved like really diving and getting into the nitty gritty and exploring those things, which I can identify with to an extent. That resonates with me. And I think for Austin, like it is exponentially, he'll do it. He'll talk the tough talk, you know, he'll have those but the man's going to need to recharge. He's not going to be able to come out of a, you know, 4-hour conversation we just had on camera. He's not going to be able to just pick it up right there.
Yeah.
And so
I think
that highlighted their disconnect because then I think it was a cumulative effect. So as they were trying to figure things out and now you have this communication rift, well now for someone like Austin, it's creating more of a barrier. It's like, you're getting upset that I'm not talking about it. It's creating this level of frustration. Like these are impacting, I mean, it's no secret. Intimacy was an issue for them, right? Like this is
the slower intimacy speed. Yes, we know all about it.
This is impacting like, it's hard for me to want to be intimate off the heels of an argument.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Or off the heels of you being frustrated that I'm not doing X, Y, and Z. And so I think that just created a greater and greater schism. Now credit to them. I think why they were that glimmer of hope for so long is I believe they both genuinely in their own ways were trying to work through it. It's just their methodologies, like they had a problem with each other's methodologies. Becca saying like, look, I need you to talk about this. Austin being like, look, I need you to give me like some space on this kind of thing.
I always felt like I trusted Becca's judgment and Becca was telling us that he was a good guy. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I'm like, I believe Becca and I believe that he is a good guy. And I still do. I had a soft spot for Austin.
You did.
Yeah. I did.
And I feel like she said that even, I mean, till the very end. I don't think she's ever said anything else, at least not that we've seen or heard.
Well, until the pizza party.
Well, even after that.
So let's get to you and Chloe. So we'll throw out our theories and then you can correct them. Okay, so
I love to hear him.
Here's my theory. I think Chloe is a lovely human being. I was picking up something from you though. You kept saying she's better than me. She's better than me. I think Chloe is very. So let's use a Golden Girls metaphor.
Ooh, all right, I'm here for this.
You need a little bit of Blanche, and you got a lot of Rose. And I'm not talking intelligence. I'm talking like, you know, Rose is the do-gooder. You got some Rose and you needed a little Blanche in there. That's how I feel.
That's
the take.
That was your
theory. That's my take.
Yeah. You both are unified on this?
I'm pretty.
Not Stephanie.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I think so.
You are. Yeah. That's our take.
Yep.
That's the official stance of Loomis Recap.
I would agree with that.
I think when I would say those things, like when I told her that she's a better person than I am, there were kind of two things at the forefront of my mind at that time. Number one, I wanted her to know that I recognize that disconnect, right? I recognize her passion for so many like philanthropic efforts and what was important to her. And I always would tell her, I'm not worried that you and I don't see things in the same lane, I'm worried about the intensity that there's going to be things you care about more than I do. And that could bother you. But I also wanted her to know that I celebrated the fact that I do think that she's such a great person.
It didn't come off as like condescending or anything. Like, you were complimenting her. Mm-hmm. It reminded me of the Indigo Girls line from their song. There must be 1,000 things you would die for. I could hardly think of two. And I'm like, that's them right there. Like, she was so passionate. And I admire that, but yeah. I sensed you weren't meeting that level.
It wasn't impacting my attraction or anything like that. What it did make me concerned about, I wanted to broach it early with her because I want, like, it was more so, look, if this bothers you, I need to know. Like, mm-hmm. I need to know if it bothers you that these issues that are close to your heart don't resonate with me in the same way. And you may talk about it with a certain flair and passion, and then when I'm in the conversation, that may not come from me. And I want to make sure you could be okay with that. Or if you're not, and it causes you to question, do I really have the same perspective? Like, let's have that conversation. So I didn't feel that per se. Like, I didn't feel like it. I was trying to be proactive about it more so than thinking like, oh, I think this is what's gonna be the great thing that takes us down.
I don't know. I just felt like, so you're talking to two moms of twins here, right? My twin daughters are 17. Stephanie has twin 21-year-olds. And we're like, five foster kids, five teenagers in a house. We can barely deal with one.
I will come to her defense here. So, because this has been the popular theory, right?
There are people who are built for that, and God bless them. It's not me. God bless you.
And look, I think it's clear that I'm probably not built for it.
The world needs people like that. They're just not happening here.
So remember when I had alluded to how I would troll her with the earrings?
Yes. Was she trolling you?
About the five foster kids,
I said that to you. I'm like, I think she's trolling him.
So like when we were at the animals, we knew we were going to the animal sanctuary. I knew that the theme of this was going to be like, these are her dreams. Mm-hmm. How does he react to them? So like, we're there at the animal sanctuary. And I know it's kind of like, how is he with, now in my mind, I'm like, I'm great with animals. So that's fine. I'm fine with that. And I knew we were going to talk about her desire to foster. And when she had dropped the five kids on there, like in my head was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, but then I'm like looking at her, and I could, like, by that time we knew each other pretty well. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I think she's messing with me. And like, and that's why when we talked about, it only came up one other time. And I do the whole, like, fostering doesn't scare me. Five does. And I'm kind of inviting her, like, you want to say that?
Just thinking back to that scene, we were laughing so hard because you were just like, it's just the intensity of it.
And I'm literally going, no shit.
Yeah, because I never felt the pressure from Chloe that the animal sanctuary and the foster kids were going to be fast follows.
They weren't waiting for you on the other side of the set once you got off decision day. Kids.
I always felt like, because what I would always tell her is when it came to the animal sanctuary, that was a pretty quick conversation. She's like, look, this is a dream of mine. If it doesn't happen, This is like, we're talking decades from now. So I was like, okay, then we don't even need to talk logistics about it then. Sure. Maybe just size and scope, but not logistics. And then with the foster kids, my whole thing was, before we bring kids into our relationship, I would want us to be at a very secure place where it's like the only way we feel like we're going to get the enrichment that we want is through raising children together. Mm-hmm. And she was aligned there too. So I'm probably doing myself a disservice because it would have been so much easier just to be like, look, it's the animal sanctuary.
You need a shirt that just says it was the five foster kids and just wear it around. Everybody will know. All right. We have to wrap because we've kept you over an hour now. But we have one ending question, and this comes from our group, and I think it's a good question to end with. If you were in charge, what improvements do you think you would make to this process to maybe have a higher success rate instead of 0 for 5?
I think I would limit the group outings and try to and really think through it more. Like, instead of just like, well, we just want them all to hang out. Like, well, what's the purpose? Is it just celebratory? If it is, let's kind of keep it in that vein. Let's minimize the cross couple chatter, because like even in real life, like, how often are you able to foster a successful relationship if your friends are constantly in it?
Yeah, never. Right. I want them out, away from me. Get away from me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that would be one change. I think there's an opportunity because they have so much information on us that I don't think the experiences have to look, the journey doesn't have to look the same for each couple. And what I mean by that is, like, they don't each have to go through the same exercises. They don't each have to have the same checkpoints. Like, you, there's an opportunity to know in advance and anticipate where those problem areas would be, what type of things they're receptive to in terms of, like, okay, if we're going to, this exercise might work for couple A, but, you know, if it's like writing a letter to yourself, well, you know, this person enjoys writing, that might work great for them. But this person, like, he needs to talk things out. Like, maybe he has a conversation with his previous self. I think those are kind of the two main changes. And I think the last one, and it's tough because the experts are there for us. And there's this weird feeling of, like, not, I guess I can only speak for myself. There were probably times where I was like, man, we should kind of call them in. But it was like, there wasn't anything crazy going wrong. Like, it's, you know, you feel like they're like superheroes almost. You're supposed to call them in in moments of crisis. But I think there's also an opportunity to be like, look, like, if you guys really need them, like, they're here for you.
This,
like,
is even their job. Yes.
Yeah. Even if, cause that was something I could personally say I struggled with. Cause I didn't have with Chloe, there wasn't like, even when I was starting to have doubts, it wasn't like, oh, there's this big problem I have with her.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, what am I going to say to them?
It wasn't just like one topic of, yeah.
It wasn't a slower intimacy speech.
Yeah, it wasn't any of that. But
it wasn't a broken ticker.
But then in retrospect, and especially seeing our decision day back, it was like, man, there was plenty of opportunity where I could have reached out to them, whether that's me by myself or with the two of us. And we probably could have had really constructive conversations.
Do you feel though that, oh, I'm sorry, Steph.
No, that's good. So my question, I don't know, you might want to go first, but my question was more of like, what do you feel, how do you feel about how they've changed, like, the living situation? Like, in previous seasons, well, earlier seasons, I should say, couples would have to choose whose place they were going to live at. How do you feel about them putting you in like a neutral space? Like, do you feel there was a benefit to that? Or do you think there would have been more benefit to being in your own space and maybe sharing space, you know, at her place or your, like, you know, what do you think about that?
I would say, and you actually just inspired another potential change. I think that should be part of the questionnaire we take. Like, do you want to offer your space for cohabitation, or do you need like a neutral spot? Because, you know, pragmatically, someone might, like, let's say they're in a studio or whatnot, and it can't work. I think,
or a basement.
I think that that's a good opportunity to kind of give the couples, you know, input on that. Because I think for us, like for Chloe and I would say that, I think she would agree, but that'd be, I should ask her. I think moving into a neutral spot was beneficial.
Okay.
For us, because no one felt a sense of ownership of the place. It was much easier to kind of be very considerate of each other, because it's like we're building this environment for us as we're getting used to it.
The problem with that is, I think people feel like in previous seasons we saw a lot of this, like, they just don't stay there. You know what I mean? They just go there to film.
Right.
But I mean, you could do that if you're living at home too. Like, Chloe could go to her house and then just come over when you're filming. So I don't know if that, you know, would change.
I mean, I think to your point, none of this will work without active participation.
Yeah.
Right. You have to actively be participating, or else you could put the best process together and it won't work.
Yeah. I feel like you made a good decision for yourself. And I see that, you know, you feel that way as well. Do you have any regrets? Do you regret? Because you said on the special that's going to air tonight that the boys are teasing you. You know, you should have said yes. What was your problem? Do you feel that way? Or do you feel like you and Chloe are just meant to be in each other's lives as something else?
So I can get, I will answer that. But it kind of comes from two spaces, because there was a feeling I had, especially during the reunion. And I would say part of Where Are They Now versus now, because I've gotten to build like a friendship with Chloe throughout mm-hmm. this entire time. And of course the guys tease me. They all love her. That's why.
Yeah.
I regretted, and I mean, I tried to articulate it as best as I could on the reunion. I regretted when I felt like things were going downhill for us. You know, we were good at kind of having that conversation and communicating, like, I'm starting to worry. For me, it was like, oh, I feel like we're not building. Like, I at the back end of this, I feel like we need to be at a certain level for me to say yes. And I feel like we're not building at the rate that we'll be there. Sure. We're building, but yeah. It's not going at that rate. But what I didn't say was, what do you think we should do? How do we solve this? Do you have any ideas? Mm. Like, I never invited the opportunity to talk through the
conversation, sure.
How to solve it. I was just more so saying, like, this is our problem. So I really wish I would have done that at the time, because then I think it would have opened up. I think I would have seen more of, like, I knew there was never any question in my mind how invested she was in this, but I think it would have allowed her to be a lot more direct with me on certain things, especially if she sensed like a variance in our commitment levels, which was one of the grievances she brought.
Right.
And I think the biggest thing, the biggest regret in terms of a conversation we didn't have, was what I'll call our success criteria. I got to talk about a little bit in an after party, but I assumed what I thought was needed to say yes was pretty much what she needed, in that we had to have.
Okay.
For me, it was like, I need this really, I don't expect to be in love with you after 6.5 weeks, but I do expect to feel some really strong, irrational, you know, feeling to want to stay married. Her success criteria was almost the inverse of mine. It was, for her, it was, I'm showing my commitment to this by not putting such a high bar. Right? Like, as long as you're not a terrible person, we're mostly...
Sounds like my dating history.
You're not a terrible person. We're mostly aligned. Right. There is a level of attraction to work with at its basic level. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to say yes. And so there's this huge space between where I was at and where she was at. And I think, honestly, I think I probably needed to come down more than she needed to come up. I joked with her saying, like, it wouldn't have been romantic to me, Chloe, if you were like, you know, I'm staying with you because you're not terrible. I'll need a little. I'll need a little more than that. And she understood. So I think there was an opportunity for maybe her success criteria to just be a little bit more for my own comfort, right? Mm-hmm. But I think there was an opportunity to bring mine significantly down in consideration of what this journey is. So that's what I'd regret then, but. In terms of, like, now that we've built, we've had, you know, X amount of months to really build a friendship, I do think ultimately we would have faced some big challenges. I think just, you know, philosophically, what informs our decision making, things like that. I think she would also argue, you know, things happen as they should, you know, what is meant for us will never pass us by.
I can't explain it. I just felt like you guys, although I enjoyed you both, I think you're both lovely people. You were so respectful of each other. There was chemistry, but I just felt like there was they're not the right match. Mm-hmm. They're just not. Mm-hmm. Like, we could see that.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it was, but it seemed like of all the couples that you guys had the best chance.
Yeah.
That's why we were really like, oh, God damn it.
No,
but I get it.
I was dreading watching, because I was fortunate enough that Chloe and I were in a good enough space that we watched Decision Day together.
Oh, when wow.
It aired. Really?
Okay. All right.
And it was a very unique experience for me, because I was even telling her as we were watching, I was like, you know, I didn't really get to, not that I didn't get to, I didn't allow myself to kind of grieve the fact that this relationship didn't work. You know, I kind of not moved on, but I did other things until it was going to be reunion time. And it was weird for me to kind of see it play out. And then it was like, I was grieving it in the moment. Like,
yeah.
And so that's why I can empathize why people felt the type of way that we didn't work out.
I actually cried.
Yeah, she
and
was
I
crying.
Don't cry at TV, but I cried when you said no.
Is there, again, I'm so sorry. We're going to let you go, I promise. I'm going to give you time to promote your charity. But
you guys take all the time you need. I cleared.
All these questions are coming up.
Irritating fuckers.
Is there an incentive? Like, in other words, if you say no on decision day, does the show pay for the divorce? And if you don't, do you have to pay for it yourself later down the road? Like, is there some kind of incentive to decide on decision day?
I don't think there is. I mean, I'm trying to, you mean like to make it to decision
day? Yeah, like what is the, I guess I'm saying like, why is decision day the thing? You know, why doesn't everybody try to go past and then divorce? Like, so did you and Chloe have to pay for your divorce? Let's start there. Or did the show have to pay for it?
No, so the show covers a certain amount.
Okay.
You know, as long as you're able to, and it's a pretty high amount. I think the only way you wouldn't meet it is if two people really were trying to be difficult.
Weren't like amicable, right? Yeah.
So my question is, would they still pay for it if you decide to divorce 6 months down the road?
Oh yeah, so there is a time frame. So
okay.
Okay. I forgot exactly what it is, but if you decide that you guys want a divorce, let's just say like within a year, within the first year, they'll still cover it. Okay. So there's no additional incentive to be like,
I better say okay, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's what happens with Love is Blind, because everybody seems to break up like right before that 1 year mark. It's like, okay.
Well, and that's true.
And it's the same production company.
And honestly, I think, and I get why people say this. So I'm curious to just hear your thought process as I say it. Because one of the things that I see or that people even said to me is like, well, why don't you just try? Right? Like, just you say yes and you see how it is. Like, there was enough there. And I get that argument. I think at the time, and I put more merit behind that now than I did then. I think at the time it was hard for me to think that way, because I did something so unorthodox to have this marriage doesn't mean that all my decisions about this relationship is going to be that
right.
unorthodox.
Sure.
Like at some point I'm going to ground myself, and it was hard for me to imagine just saying to anyone, like in any scenario, like, well, we'll just try to be married.
You know, I'm somebody who, what is your astrological sign?
Oh yeah.
A Virgo.
Oh, okay. Ooh, right. I'm a Libra, I'm on the Virgo cusp.
Okay.
I'm somebody who, in my thought process, in my philosophy on life, I can live very much in the gray, right? But when it comes to my life decisions, there's no gray for me. Like, I'm either in or out. And that would bother me, being like, okay, let's wade into the gray. And maybe we're kind of married. And maybe we're kind of, like, that personally for me, I can absolutely understand what you're saying, because I would need to make a decision that day.
I agree with that.
It's the weirdness of me, I guess. I thought I had you pegged for a Libra. The way you were flirting with Lauren on
we
that.
We talked about it earlier, too. And I was like, I don't think he's
we
a
did.
Libra.
We did. Mm-hmm. You went in to meet with Lauren. And you were saying, you know, this is what the crowds have wanted. And I'm like, look at him flirting. Look at him. And Stephanie was like, he's not flirting. I'm like, if you're a Libra, it's like second nature. You don't even know what's happening. And that's what I thought you were doing.
Okay. I'm like, I don't think he's a Libra. But
Do you want to shut down the rumors? Are you and Lauren dating? Are you not dating? Are you just friends?
Lauren and I aren't dating. Yeah, I mean, I think. Like,
what if he was like, we're actually really together.
I was just like, hey, Lauren, come out real quick.
Oh my God, I would have fell over.
No, I mean, by the time we had filmed Where Are They Now, like.
You probably never want to see any of these people again.
And we don't blame you, Michael.
Like, we knew about those whispers. Like, that's why I brought that up, you know, but no, we're not dating. And I don't. I mean, I never felt like we were ever on the cusp.
And is the bad blood between her and Chloe, is that a real thing?
Was that real, that fight?
They definitely had a falling out.
Okay.
Definitely had a falling out. I mean, I purposely try not to know too much of the details because.
Yep.
I mean, with my friendship with Chloe and everything, like I could tell how worked up she gets kind of thinking mm-hmm. about it. So I try not to conjure that too much.
Okay.
So are you and Chloe still in contact?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
is she are? In the okay. back room?
Oh, oh my God.
Three women play. Just come out. No,
her and some of the guys will be here. We're going to watch the Where Are They Now?
Oh, tonight. Okay.
That's
all right.
Awesome.
Okay. Do me a favor. Don't tell Brandon about our show. I don't want him to know about it.
We're a little scared.
I won't.
Scared for my life.
I won't.
You could tell Becca. That would be about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Maybe Austin. Okay. All right, Michael, thank you so much. Tell us about your charity and the wonderful work that you're doing.
Yes. Yeah, so there is an organization called Haymakers for Hope. And they travel throughout the country. They put on all these different events like marathons, in this case, a boxing event, where all the fundraising goes towards cancer research. So this is their sixth year doing this particular boxing charity event here in Denver. It'll be on June 13th at the Mission Ballroom, which is a pretty awesome kind of like music venue here.
Cool.
So everyone who participates in it, we have like, you know, fundraising goals that we're trying to meet. And most of the people, if not all, have been impacted by cancer in some way, shape or form. So this is their way to kind of tell their story of how it impacted them and challenge themselves to, you know, contribute towards the fight against cancer. Because I will say this, like, boxing another human being is way more stressful than I thought it would be.
Oh, yeah, I bet. Imagine. I bet. Yeah. I would lose every single one of those. I would like try to hit somebody and then run away crying the minute I was touched.
Oh, my arms are too short. Yeah.
I remember when you guys were recapping the episode when I took Chloe to the gym, and it was enough to kind of inspire for you wanting to try it out.
I was wanting to box, yes. The thought of punching someone is amazing. The thought of being punched,
yeah, not so much.
No.
Yeah, that's
no.
the worst part. No. We can cut that out.
The funny thing for me is I'm not a sports person, like, at all.
Mm-hmm.
I don't hate. I just know nothing about sports. But there's something about boxing that I'm like, I can get behind that.
Mm-hmm. So you will.
It's
you
like
will...
Fight Club, dude. Mm-hmm. Hot guys all punching well, fight each club. Other. Throw fight some soap in there. It's like my dream.
Fight Club is different. If we're gonna talk Fight Club, that's a different animal. Will you? You'll give me the link, and I can drop everything in the show notes.
Oh, yeah,
where people can donate. People can support. Okay.
Yeah. They can donate towards, they could donate towards, you know, me as a fighter. If there's another fighter they see on there that they want to throw a donation to,
that would be a real dick move.
I mean,
guys,
it's all going to the same place.
Support Michael. Yes.
Even the people that don't like me, they could, because the matchups are posted, so they could see who I'm fighting. So.
Okay.
All right.
One last question. Since you're in Colorado, I don't know if you have been plugged into the reality world of polygamy, but a lot of these seeking sister wife couples are in Colorado. I don't know what's happening there. I don't know if there's an orb in the middle of Colorado where people just get freaky. I don't know what's happening. So I just have a question for you. If you were going to be a polygamist tomorrow, which two of the women would you pick to be your sister wives?
Say Amy and Stephanie. Say Amy and Stephanie.
No, of the women on the show. We're a given.
It's right here. There's a lot of dynamics to consider.
Mm-hmm. I love this answer. It's a very calculated answer.
If I were looking at them in a silo and I didn't have to factor in how they would get along.
Oh, no, you have to factor that in.
Yeah, this is the most.
Love should be multiplied, not divided.
Right. Must.
Damn.
Now, they don't go weird, okay? So they don't have to do anything with each other. They just have to be sister wives to each other.
They just have to both love you and pretend to love each other. Say stuff.
I mean, what I'm trying to figure out is
because
Chloe, I would pick Chloe.
Okay, so then you need someone that's going to get along with Chloe. And would Chloe be? She would be first wife because she has first wife energy.
Yes.
Yeah, she'd be first wife for sure.
Yeah, she would have to be first wife. I would have a problem if she wasn't.
I'm debating. I'm debating between Lauren and Claire on which one that I would pick between the two of them. Mm. I just feel like it would be hard. It would be very difficult to make harmony with all that.
Well, if you come from a certain famous polygamous school of thought, you don't really give a shit how the wives feel. So like, it's all about you. So like, if you wanted Lauren as the second wife, that would be it. Yeah. But I understand what you're saying. You're considering Chloe's feelings and who would she jive better with?
Yeah.
Okay. And Claire ultimately might be useful to have a therapist in the mix.
Yeah. And I view the argument like I'm doing it in threes. Like if we're all arguing, I feel like if I'm arguing with Chloe and Lauren, that's a lot more explosive than if I'm arguing with like Chloe and Claire. But then
that's true. There might be.
I noticed Emily. Emily's not even an option.
Oh dear Lord,
for the fighting.
Michael, let me just say. Okay. Oh, that's a question. Do you like to be called Michael or Mike or Mikey?
I'm for it all. Like rolls off the tongue for you guys.
Okay. Well, I call you Michael.
Yeah.
I like it.
Okay. All right. I was really just asking because Amy's the only person that calls me Steph.
And I wanted to say Steph, but I wasn't sure. Oh, no, that's what was coming natural to me.
She's the only one that does. So that's why I was like, oh, I'd never even asked you what you wanted to be called.
Mm-hmm. Well, Michael, thank you very much. Thank you for your support during the season. We loved that you were listening and we tried really hard because I have a rule that I don't talk to cast members before the season's over. So like we tried really hard to pretend you weren't listening
and to
be unfiltered. So we apologize if we said some shitty things.
Oh, no. I hope, like, I never wanted you to feel like you couldn't.
No, we know. We could tell you were our people. We could tell right away.
Yes, we got it.
When you loved being called Broke Down Prince, we were like, he gets it. He gets the joke because it's all in good fun.
Yeah. Oh, I loved it. That was a favorite moment of mine. Stephanie, you turning. Well, because in the beginning, I was like, oh, man, she not. Like Amy, I was immediately flattered by you, Amy. Like you're like, no, he's
I'm easy.
He's weird.
I'm the Blanche. I'm there.
Yeah, and I'm the total Dorothy. So yeah, it makes sense.
The only thing that I wish I had time to do was like, I feel like if I had more time to make my case to beat out Clint as like your favorite, that would be the only thing.
You're over Clint for me. Stephanie's the one you got to win out there. If they have that ginger bond.
You're not gonna
break that ginger bond.
I don't know.
They have gingery features. All right, Michael. Thank you so much.
Lathering himself up in my suds. So I don't know.
Do you want to tell everyone where they can find you on social media?
Yeah. They could find me. Let me make sure. I don't even know what my handle is. Yeah.
Isn't it Mikey is here?
It is. It's _ Mikey is here with another underscore.
Oh, okay.
That is where they can find me.
It's flanked by the underscore.
It is flanked by the underscore.
Okay. All right, guys. Please check out Michael's charity event, Haymakers for
Hope.
Please check that out. Donate if you can. And thank you so much, Michael. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
This was awesome.
Yeah, this is fun.
Love your bones.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.